welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Islamophobia isn't new, but it has reached epic proportions, it seems, in the United States since 9/11. Now the immediate conflict is over a mosque and community center planned for a site near where the Twin Towers once stood in New York City. We'll talk about the overarching prejudice against Muslims in the United States and also the mosque today. To our listeners, I want to ask you if you the opponents have demanded that a planned mosque and community center be moved farther from the site where more than 2,700 people were killed on September 11th, 2001. But how far would that be? If you think the mosque should be moved, call and tell us, where should it go? Joining us in a bit is Yasir Qadi, one of the scholars on the YouTube video that we're going to be listening to. And then later on, Abdinur Mohammed, an educator and member of the local Muslim community. Right now, we have Harris Taran, who is director of the Muslim Public Affairs Council's Washington, D.C. office, where he oversees outreach to federal agencies, members of Congress, think tanks, and civil society groups on key issues, including Islamophobia and Muslim American identity. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ann. Thank you for having me.
I wanted to listen to a cut right away from the YouTube video. It's called Injustice Cannot Defeat Injustice. Some of America's leading Muslim figures speak on the use of violence as a means to impact change and its contrary nature to Islam's teachings. Imam Hamza Yousef says the religion in this cut says this religion is not our property and we have no right to corrupt its name.
We have no right to detract, to pollute, to sully the good name of Islam and the good name of our Prophet ﷺ. We are obliged to honor that name. If you go by the name Muslim, that is a very exalted status, to be one who submits to the will of God. And it's important to not arrogate to oneself the idea that somehow you know what the will of God is.
How did the video come about?
And I think the message is quite clear in the video. The Muslim American community, Muslim American scholars, and Muslim American institutions, for many years now, even prior to 9/11, have been talking about the use of violence and its antithetical nature against all the values that Islam stands for. And I think what we wanted to do was to ensure that message, which has been put forth by scholars, which has been put forth by Muslim American institutions, was heard in unison. And so we had nine of the most prominent Muslim American thought leaders come out in one video in the form of a PSA to ensure that the voices of terror, the voices of hate, which come from overseas, people like Anwar al-Awlaki, people like Adam Kadan of Al-Qaeda, these individuals who are full of hate and full of terror, who try to use their internet savviness to reach what young Muslims or the Muslim American community here, we wanted to ensure that their voices were completely drowned out and that authentic Muslim American scholars, thought leaders, were heard on the use of violence. And the fact is that violence is not something that we as a community use in as you said, bring about social change. That in no way is something that is supported by Islamic values and Islamic teachings. And we wanted to make sure that message was very precisely given to young Muslim Americans, to the Muslim American community, and to our broader fellow citizens to ensure that they hear what our scholars, what our thought leaders are saying about the use of violence. So I think that's what the impetus of the video. That's why we wanted to ensure that the video was clear, precise, and really included thought leaders from across the board, theologically, from various schools and various leanings. And I think that their message has been heard quite effectively.
My guest is Harris Taran. He is director of the Muslim Public Affairs Council's Washington, D.C. office, where he oversees outreach to federal agencies, members of Congress, think tanks, and civil society groups on key issues. We were just listening to a cut from a video that the Muslim Public Affairs Council produced. If you'd like to listen to it yourself on YouTube, it's called Injustice Cannot Defeat Injustice. You said it's part of the message was – or the message was intended in part to reach non-Muslim Americans. Do you have a sense about how effective it's been?
I think it's been quite effective in that terms. I mean, CNN did a full piece on the video. Mm-hmm. The New York Times reported on the video. The Attorney General himself, Eric Holder, referred to the video in a press conference that he held in Washington, D.C. The head of the House Homeland Security Committee, Congresswoman Jane Harman, sent out a press release on the video. So I think that video has really gotten out, and the video has really reached places and reached the corners that Muslim Americans usually do not have access to or that are not engaged in. And I think it's been effective in reaching out to the broader community at large. And we see that response with the feedback that we get as an organization. We get a lot of feedback in terms of how many people have heard and seen the video and heard of the video, and really the positive messages that we get back from the average citizen who says, this was the first time I've heard a message like this. This is the first time I've heard Muslim American thought leaders, Muslim American scholars, without any question denouncing violence, without denouncing terrorism and denouncing terror. So I think from the feedback that we've gotten, it's really been able to get the message out to the average citizen.
You know, you said some of the feedback you've received is that it's the first time a lot of people have heard from Muslim American thought leaders and others about this issue. That's 9 years ago, since
right.
September 11th. A lot of folks have asked in the meantime, what took so long?
Unfortunately, it did not take long, but unfortunately, the message has not gotten out, and I think that's where it's a messaging problem. It's a messaging issue. From the day of 9/11 until now, our community, our institutions, all the Muslim American institutions, Muslim American thought leaders and scholars have continuously condemned and gone beyond condemning also. And I think it's important that we go beyond condemning. We have been condemning for 9 years. We've been talking about against violence for 9 years. And we've actually gone beyond it. We've established programs. Our organization has a national grassroots campaign to fight terrorism, which we established in 2005 that has has engaged local mosques nationally from around the country. Other Muslim American organizations have had anti-terror campaigns, have had anti-extremism campaigns, anti-radicalization campaigns. These campaigns are out there. There was a national fatwa, an edict, a religious edict that was given by national and international scholars against violence and against terrorism. The message is, the content has been out there, but unfortunately the messaging has not received many Americans, and I think that's part of the challenge that we as Muslim American institutions, institutions like ours have is to really expand our resources and ensure that our fellow citizens hear this message. And that was in part why we decided that we wanted to be a little bit more creative, see if this video can go viral, go on the internet. As you know, unfortunately, Osama bin Laden and his extremist cohorts can sit in a cave, record a video, and CNN, Fox News, BBC, all the national outlets will give it attention without any hesitation. But unfortunately, our resources, when we put out videos, when we put out messages, when we put out religious rulings by Muslim American thought leaders, that doesn't get out. That doesn't make the headline.
But something was different about this video, though, because you did get the headlines with that.
Right, and I think part of it was the fact that the timing is extremely important. There's been a lot of issues surrounding Islamophobia. There's been a lot of issues surrounding the Fort Hood attack and the Times Square attack. And I think timing was crucial. The fact that you had so many different Muslim American scholars who were on one piece and really condemning and speaking out, and like I said, going beyond condemning, also had to do with the fact that it really got out and people paid attention to it.
We did a program last week, I think, on anti-Catholicism in the 1920s in the United States. And at the heart of the fear of Catholics at the time was that they wanted to take over the country, and that attack from the church in terms of responding to it was to just not do anything. And the show was actually about a priest who had been murdered, probably because he was so very outspoken. Were you in part, as a community, sort of hoping that maybe if we just don't make a big stink about this, it'll mellow out, it'll chill?
Well, like I said, I think we have been making a stink about it. Mm-hmm. We've been extremely vocal in terms of from within the community, yeah, against the Al-Qaeda narrative, against the Al-Qaeda rhetoric. I think we as Muslim Americans have not really, saved any punches in ensuring that the Al-Qaeda the narrative and the Al-Qaeda rhetoric is countered by Muslim American scholars. But we have realized that now our fellow citizens need to hear more of it and need to hear it directly from our mouths, not just from the media, not just from national news outlets. So we have decided that a Muslim American narrative needs to be heard. And I think that's part of the problem, is that, like you said, most of it is based on fear. Most of it is based on the fact that our citizens don't know many Muslim Americans. And there's a Washington Post poll that was done that Americans who knew neighbors who were either Muslim, either neighbors or coworkers, they tended to have a better impression and image of the faith also, because that faith became personalized. And they had friends, and they had neighbors and coworkers. And I think part of the challenge of the Muslim American community is that we have to now go beyond just building institutions for ourselves, but really reaching out to neighbors and engaging them and ensuring that the Muslim American narrative, because the Muslim American history is quite rich in this country, and that narrative is heard by our neighbor.
The video, correct me if I'm wrong, too, I think came out at the beginning of August.
July, yes.
Okay. And yet this conflict over the mosque in New York City seems to have eclipsed a lot of perhaps the goodwill that it might have generated.
Unfortunately, this controversy that's been created, and I think the key word is created, the individuals who created this controversy are individuals who have really shown their true faith. Individuals like Pamela Geller, and other folks, Robert Spencer, who have really made a cottage industry out of Muslim baiting and really ensuring that the Muslim American voice is marginalized. This was not something that was authentically done by the people of New York. It was one or two individuals who started writing on a blog and then who started to really play on sentiments and fears of people. They called it inaccurately the Ground Zero Mosque. When number one, it is not in Ground Zero. Mm-hmm. It's two blocks away, and it is not a mosque. It's a Islamic community center, which will have a swimming pool, which will have cooking classes, which will have a gym, which will do outreach to local communities. Exactly what we need. And when I said engaging our neighbors, our coworkers, our fellow citizens, I think unfortunately when we allow fear and fear mongers to play on our sensitivities. And I think the worst thing is that they're playing on the worst of sensitivities. Our country was attacked on 9/11. Muslim Americans and non-Muslim Americans were attacked on 9/11. There were Muslim Americans who perished in both towers on that day. There were Muslim American first responders who went in to save lives and never came out. And it's an affront to America. It's an affront to our values as a nation. And it's an affront to Muslim Americans to really, when we talk about sensitivities, to not talk about Muslim Americans who are also attacked. So we're attacked on one front, but at the same time, our faith was attacked on that day. Muslim Americans will tell you that their faith was attacked on 9/11. Their country, their institutions, their government institutions, their financial institutions, and their faith was attacked. And I think the important thing is that we need to come together as a country and ensure that we move forward so that we don't give Al-Qaeda and extremists another card to play with. I mean, unfortunately, some of these bloggers and Islamophobes have written the next script for Al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. They've written the next narrative. And that's exactly what Al-Qaeda wants. Al-Qaeda wants Muslim Americans to be a fifth column. Al-Qaeda wants Muslim Americans to be treated as second-class citizens. And we will not allow that because we know the values of our nation is much stronger than that. And the values of our nation is what will, at the end of the day, defeat extremists like Al-Qaeda.
We have to take a break. My guest is Harris Terran. And joining us in a few minutes, Yasir Qadhi. He's one of the scholars on the YouTube video. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 or email us on allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation, clear, straight, open, from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation begins later this afternoon at 2 o'clock right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. It's 71 degrees in downtown Columbus at 1022 this morning. Cloudy skies, a high of 80 degrees, partly cloudy tonight, a low of 62. Sunshine for Tuesday and a high of 82. And looking ahead to Wednesday, a slight chance of rain, otherwise partly cloudy, and a high of 82. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about Islamophobia in the United States, the controversy over the proposed community center and mosque in New York City. We have Harris Terran. He's director of the Muslim Public Affairs Council's Washington, D.C. office. And joining us now, Yasir Qadhi. He's one of the scholars on the YouTube video that we spoke of earlier. Welcome to the show, Yasir.
Thank you for having me.
How did you come to be on the video?
Well, Harris sent me an email asking me to be a part of the project, and I immediately responded and said, of course, sure, it's my pleasure.
How did you decide what you were going to say?
Actually, I've been thinking about this topic for quite a while, especially ever since Anwar al-Awlaki, the radical cleric in Yemen, had released his statements a year and a half ago. And I was really itching to come forth and say something on a public platform, and I think this MPAC video provided the perfect opportunity for me to do that. So it was a pretty simple no-brainer for me. I mean, I'd already written about a number of issues and given speeches here and there, but I hadn't been approached by a national organization like MPAC to do something like this. And so I had a lot of ideas and thoughts in my mind. And I gave – actually, the video that I gave was actually around 15, 20 minutes, and they took a short clip from that. And they're also going to release the overall video later on.
So what – in the video that is in the YouTube video, Injustice Cannot Defeat Injustice, what did you say?
I was talking about the fact that a lot of these, quote-unquote, these terrorists or these radical militants – a lot of them, they feel that there's some type of Robin Hood figure, that there's some type of David defeating Goliath. And I told them, well, there's no doubt that our religion does have this element of standing up for truth and helping the widow and helping the orphan. But there's a methodology. There's a way you do that. And what you guys are doing, you're causing more harm than good. And you're actually becoming a Goliath. You're actually becoming the very evil entity that you claim you're saving the Muslims from by your own tactics. And the way you do that is by killing more innocent people and by spreading more bloodshed. And I think that's really the main message that these people need to hear, and they need to be told quite explicitly.
Is it too that a lot of the folks that participate in the violence and the terrorism aren't even putting that much thought into it in the first place?
It there's different types of people that are getting involved. Some of them, yes, definitely, they really are. They're just acting so emotionally. They're just not really thinking through many steps.
Yeah, and like young men are wont to do.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And some of them, they are contemplating. They're thinking about what they need to do, and they think that it's their somehow responsibility or God-given right to help some faraway cause by doing something really radical here locally. So there are different types of people that do get caught up in these ideas.
I asked at the outset of the hour to our listeners, if you oppose the demand, if you oppose the planned mosque and community center in New York City, how far would you want it to move from the spot that it's planned for? How far away can it be moved? We have an email from Muhammad now, writes, about the mosque proposal in Lower Manhattan. I'm concerned that three blocks would not be far enough away, or four or five. I think they don't want any mosques built, hence the efforts to block mosque construction in Tennessee and elsewhere. Aren't mosques the best places to help Muslims feel rooted here and committed to being a constructive part of the larger community? People come with their children and create a sense of home and community together. They have programs and activities that get people involved, like the many Feed the Needy efforts at mosques across the country. Yasser, is this something that perhaps is overdue, or is it right on time? How do you feel about that?
Absolutely. I actually completely agree with Muhammad's sentiments here, and that is that there's really no better way to counteract radicalization than by showing the reality of American democracy, of American freedom. How can you get radicalized when you see the overwhelming majority of Americans are supportive of the freedom of different groups to practice their religion and to be who they are? It's only when these bigots, the right-wing bigots, they succeed, that this will actually fuel more radicalization. This will actually play into the Al-Qaeda narrative. That's when Al-Qaeda is saying, Anwar al-Awlaki, you know Anwar al-Awlaki's basic message is you cannot be a Muslim in America. Well, guess what? The right is saying the exact same thing. It's the exact same message. You cannot be a good Muslim and be an American citizen. The two messages coincide 100%. And we have to fight the extremists on both sides. That's just not right. And if we let them do this, then unfortunately, this will fuel the very radicalization that that the right is claiming to fight against.
In the video, there's nine scholars. The point being, you know, they're pulled together from all different what? I mean, what's different about each one of them? Why can't one person speak for all?
Well, I mean, I think that just like in Protestant Christianity or in or even in Judaism, I mean, there are different understandings, different nuances, which to an outsider might seem quite, you know, quite trivial or quite not quite tangible. But within the community, there are different trends, different movements. And I think this is just a natural tendency. We don't have a pope figure in Islam, just like in Protestant Christianity. So it's necessary that we get different scholars and different people together. I mean, all of the people that appear on the video, they're very good friends of mine. We're very close. We represent various theologies, various nuanced traditions. I think that this is a common human trend in all religions.
I wanted to listen to another cut from the video. It's Imam Zaid Shakir, and it says that Islam teaches balance in all of our affairs, not extremism.
Not a religion that's amenable to extremism. And because of that, you don't see Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala giving success to the advocates of extremism, to the advocates of indiscriminate violence, to the advocates of killing civilians. Where are they successful? You just see one mess after another. And it's time for us to start cleaning up those messes. And even going beyond that, it's time for us to begin to contribute to the construction of something beautiful.
That was Imam Hamza Yousef joining us now. Yasser Qadhi, he's one of the scholars also on the YouTube video, and also Harris Terran. He's the director of the Muslim Public Affairs Council's Washington, D.C. office. MPACA produced the video. Yasser, after 9/11, did you imagine the anti-Muslim sentiment that would persist? Because you mentioned earlier that about a year and a half ago, you really got the itch to come out and speak out against this violence. But the bombing occurred 9 years ago.
I actually am a bit surprised at the amount of anger and venom that's being spread right now. I was expecting this type of reaction maybe 8-9 years ago. I mean, thank God it wasn't that bad 8-9 years ago, but unfortunately the situation seems to have been the situation is being utilized by, I would say, certain political pundits and certain media outlets for their own interests. So I am a bit disappointed in the fact that such hatred and such animosity is still ongoing 9-10 years after the horrific events of 9/11. I do think that a lot of Americans are against this type of bigotry and this type of racism, but this is a vocal minority that is somehow seizing center stage and making an issue out of a non-issue.
We have some emails now. If you'd like to email us, go to allsides@wosu.org. You can also call us, 614-292-8513, and you can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page as well, or you can Twitter us at Ann Fisher WOSU. Now, we have an email from a listener. Writes, I live off Hayden Run Road in Dublin, and my voting location is the Noor Islamic Cultural Center on Wilcox Road. Every time I go there to vote, I'm reminded of what a diverse and free country I live in. The Noor Islamic Cultural Center is a part of my neighborhood, and the fact that the people who worship at that facility open their doors to everyone in the community to participate in elections is a good faith gesture that is not lost on me. Harris, are there other things that could be done to like that to, I guess, in a kind of a subtle way, educate citizens about Islam and Muslims in the United States?
There are, and I think the important thing is that local mosques and communities on a daily basis engage in these actions. And as your other guest, Dr. Qadi, was saying, mosques are the best place for the development of an authentic Muslim-American identity. So Noor Islamic Center in Dublin, Ohio, is not an anomaly in that case. You have centers across the country who engage in civic participation in this month of Ramadan. We're currently in the month of Ramadan. You have an organization here locally in Washington, D.C., who's doing a program called 30-30. They're giving 30 grants on the 30 nights of Ramadan to various local charities. You've got Muslim Americans across the country in mosques and community centers doing homeless feeding drives, homeless shelters, outreach to local communities. It's these activities and actions that are actually establishing an authentic Muslim-American experience. And like I said, that's what really bothers Muslim Americans that I've spoken to regarding this whole Park 51 controversy. Because as we mentioned before, it has gone beyond the Park 51 controversy now. Now you've got folks who are opposing mosque expansions in Tennessee, in California, in Florida, in other parts of New York. But it is these institutions which inherently will develop a Muslim American identity and experience. And I think we have to ensure that the voice of hate and bigotry does not prevail over this, because these are the type of activities, these voter registration drives, homeless feedings, outreach and engagement that really establishes local communities.
We have another email from a listener, writes, I fully support the community center. I think the anti-Muslim outrage, that's in quotes, is deplorable. And it is horrible that the, quote unquote, the Muslim is in effect now seen as the new Jew when it comes to discrimination and demonization. But does your guest see any irony in the fact that Jews and Muslims are basically seen as the same despite all their mutual hatred in the Middle East? Does he think that this shared experience could be used as some sort of force to unite Israelis and Arabs in resolving the Middle East conflict? Yasser, what do you think about that?
Oh, absolutely. There was a poll that was done, I think by Gallup, was it last year, which said that those people who have anti-Semitic views generally also tend to have Islamophobic views. So it's no surprise that when somebody wants to stereotype and basically be a racist against one race, they're going to extend that racism across the board to other races. And it is definitely true that Jews and Muslims are facing similar types of battles in their stereotypes and the biases that the public has. In fact, you know, I just returned from a trip to Auschwitz, to Dachau. It was a state-sponsored trip there. And what really struck me was the fact that this mass killing that occurred in under the Nazis, it was done basically under the public eye. Everybody knew what was going on, and it had to have been preceded by a campaign of dehumanizing the Jews. And that is why, for years before the Holocaust began, there was a systematic, methodological treatment that was done to basically brainwash the minds of the people to make them think that every Jew was a potential, if you like, a person out to bring the country down. Every Jew was a type of sinister figure. And they actually had specific media campaigns in order to do that. Now, when I hear the rhetoric from the Islamophobes, I am chilled to my spine because I can't help but imagine this is similar to what would have been happening in the 1930s in Germany.
Or the 1920s against the Catholics in the United States.
Yeah, it's very scary where this is all heading.
How do you teach your followers or the people that you talk to? How do you teach people, individuals? There are the institutions, but how do you teach the individuals to address the hate when it's directed at them?
Oh, the message to the individuals is always the same, and that is humanize yourself. Go out and meet your neighbors. Go out and make sure your coworkers know who you are. You know, we want them to humanize the faith of Islam. All too often, a lot of Americans don't know their coworkers might happen to be Muslim. And because they don't know any Muslims and by faith, they can easily stereotype the entire faith. Once they know that the guy sitting in the cubicle across their desk, once they know that their doctor, once they know that their gas attendant is a Muslim, the guy who smiles and always asks, you know, how are you doing? Once they know that, it'll make it a lot easier for them to overcome those stereotypes. So my advice to the average Muslim in my congregation is always the same, and that is just be a good Muslim, which basically means be nice and kind and gentle and be a merciful person, a constructive person in your community.
Do you think that more of these videos are needed, more of the videos like Injustice Cannot Defeat Injustice?
I believe that different types of campaigns need to be launched. We need to have academic articles written. We also need a few other such videos directed to different segments of our population. So I believe that this is a multifaceted campaign, and such videos would only be one prong, if you like, of such a campaign.
Okay, Dr. Yasser Qadhi, I want to thank you for joining us today. Dr. Qadhi is one of the scholars on the YouTube video, Injustice Cannot Defeat Injustice. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
We're going to have to take another break. In the meantime, if you'd like to give us a call, 614-292-8513. Email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and talk to us there. Joining us now in a few minutes is a local community activist and educator, Dr. Abdinur Mohammed. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Developed by WOSU Public Media and the Columbus Metropolitan Library, ColumbusNeighborhoods.org features over 30 neighborhoods in and around Columbus and allows users to tell their own stories, post their own photos and video, and contribute to the collective story of Columbus. To be a part of this multimedia public engagement project or to learn more, visit ColumbusNeighborhoods.org.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News, and in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides will be here. 5 years after Hurricane Katrina, we'll hear about a documentary reconstructing events through eyewitness videos, and we'll talk to a survivor who relocated to Central Ohio. That discussion begins at 11 on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
71 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:40 this morning. Cloudy skies today with a high near 80, partly cloudy tonight, and a low of 62. Mostly sunny for Tuesday and a high of 82 degrees. And looking ahead to Wednesday, there is a slight chance of rain, otherwise partly cloudy, and still mild with a high of 82. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining us, Harris Terran. He is the director of the Muslim Public Affairs Council in Washington, D.C. Thanks again, Harris, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on.
And also Dr. Yasser Qadi. He is a lecturer, and he's also one of the voices, one of the faces on the video, Injustice Cannot Defeat Injustice. If you'd like to see that video, you can go to YouTube. And joining us now, Dr. Abdunur Mohammed. He is a local educator, a community activist. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Dr. Abdunur, have you seen the video?
Yeah, excuse me. Yes, I did, and it's a beautiful, well-done video. What is unique about this video, Anne, is that it is the first time that a coordinated effort by Muslim scholars throughout the United States who are famous figures within the community came together to do a project like this. And the second point is that they used a technology that is used by the extremists, which is videos and technology, YouTube. So by doing that, the project reached not only American Muslims and Americans in the United States, but throughout the globe, and that it brought the scholars of different denominations together on the same point to tell a different perspective, to say that Islam is for peace and Islam does not condone these acts of terrorism. But I would like to also mention that this is not the first time that Muslims and Muslim Americans have done a project like this. I think there was a project a couple of years back by CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations, called Not in Our Name. This was a national project that also discussed issues such as this. And local Muslim leaders have been communicating with their congregations, with their communities. So it did not take 9 years for the Muslim community to speak up. We've been speaking up, but the media technology that has been used now and the audience that has been reached is much wider. And as the guest said, that American media picked up this one more so than the other local communications that has been going on for years.
Okay, let's take a phone call. If you'd like to call us, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Leslie, you're on the show. Welcome.
Good morning. There's a question I would like to get an answer to if any of your guests know it. I'm sure that they probably do. The World Trade Center was a world financial center primarily. And I'm wondering whether there or not there were any countries, Muslim countries, who had people working there who were Muslim. How many Muslims died in the Twin Towers?
Harris or Dr. Qadi? Anybody?
There were actually hundreds of Muslims who were in the Trade Towers on that day, on 9/11. As I said earlier, Muslim Americans in both towers perished on that day. It was Muslim Americans and Muslims from various countries who came, who were doing business at the World Trade Center, and I think the thing that's even more more compelling is the fact that there were Muslim American first responders, firemen, EMT workers who went into the building, who tried to save people's lives, and who themselves did not come out. So Muslim Americans were part of the horror of that day. And like I said, not only was our country attacked, not only was our financial institutions and our government institutions attacked, but our faith also was attacked that day. And I think that should be part of the conversation when we talk about sensitivity.
Leslie, did that answer your question?
Well, it doesn't give me a number, but it tells me something.
The number, Leslie, that has been reported by some newspapers is that 33 Muslim Americans perished that day, which included those who were in the Twin Towers as well as the first responders. So that's about 1% of the people that have perished that day.
Okay, because I think a lot of people forget that part of the whole tragedy, that not only were there Christians and Jews in that building, but there were also Muslims in that building. And so I don't understand the controversy over the mosque at all. It makes no sense to me. I'm Jewish, and one of the things that really disappointed me was when the Anti-Defamation League came out against the building of the mosque. I just thought that, I mean, the whole idea of the Anti-Defamation League being against this building doesn't make sense. There's no logic to it. So I just wanted to to get that information, because I've been telling my friends, I said, you know, you forget that there were Muslims killed in that building also. And they say, oh, yeah, how many? I'm going, not counting the prisoners. I mean, not counting the terrorists themselves. There must have been. And so now you've given me the information that I need to continue my argument along that way.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Leslie, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. You know, we want calls from anybody. We want emails from anybody. If you're opposed to the mosque, if you have troubles, if you have a problem with Muslims in the United States, we want to hear from you, too. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We want to hear from everybody. How do conflicts, Dr. Obdener, how do they play out in Central Ohio? How are things going here?
Well, the Muslim American community here in Columbus, Ohio, as one of the guests shared earlier, are continuing on with the Ramadan. This is a month of peace. Ramadan, today is the 13th day of a month long journey of fasting. Worshiping and doing a lot of great work. So they're also paying attention to the extreme debates that are going on national television.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer now that you would hear on right wing groups, but it's now the mainstream media that is bashing Muslim Americans, and it's tough for most of them to understand that, because they believe that most of them came here to the United States. This is a country where religious diversity, where totalitarianism from the countries that they came from. This is where they wanted to come and feel somehow that they're part of the American community. And most of them know that that these are debates that will move on for a while, but the point of them is that they want to make sure that their rights are being protected, that the First Amendment protects all Americans, and that the worshiping in the community, you know, Central Ohio has been a peaceful place for Muslims to live. I think most American Muslims are very glad that the reception that they have received in living here. As you heard, the North Islamic Center and many Islamic centers here in the Central Ohio serve Muslims and non-Muslims. We have iftar, breaking of the fast dinners, where Muslims and non-Muslims come together. As a matter of fact, the Council on American Islamic Relations is holding one next Saturday, where at OSU Student Union, Muslims and non-Muslim Americans come together, break the fast together, eat together, and share what the month of Ramadan is about. So they're concerned about what's going on in the national media, but they know that the local community supports them, and they know that they feel welcome in Central Ohio.
614-292-8513. And Henry, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Okay, thank you. The Muslims claim that they are a religion of peace. And I have one other comment. And if it's a religion of peace, why are the Shiites trying to kill the Sunnis and vice versa over in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Okay, let's hear
That is why the American people do not believe that the Muslims are a religion of peace. Other comment.
Well, Henry, let's just take one at a time.
Okay.
Harris, Dr. Cotty, who would like to speak?
Sure.
Harris?
Can I address that? And I think the caller also has to understand that, unfortunately, many of these conflicts that take place, whether they be in Muslim-majority countries or other places around the world, are not necessarily all surrounding religious issues and religious wars. You have to also understand that there are many social, socio-economic issues and problems that take place in various countries, and especially countries who have been living under dictatorships and under authoritarian regimes for so many years. That transition into an open society, the transition into a democracy, takes time, and I think that's part of something that we're seeing in many of these countries where you've had authoritarian regimes for decades, and who have really stoked sect mentalities, and who have stoked fear amongst their citizens. And I think that's what you see. It's not necessarily the fact that these are Muslims who are killing in the name of their faith or religion, But unfortunately, at many times, these are ethnic strifes. These are socio-political strifes that are taking place, and that's something we also have to take into consideration.
Henry, what is your second question?
My second comment is there will never be any acceptance by the American people unless there's a definition of the word jihad that people in this country can accept.
Now, Henry, let me just, before you go on, because I want them to address your question or your comment, but we've already had a couple people, at least two or three people, write in emails today saying that they support the rights of Muslim Americans and they don't have a problem with the mosque.
I understand that.
Okay.
But I'm saying the word jihad, J-I-H-A-D.
Okay. I just said you said Americans will never accept, and I
right.
Not all Americans is what
okay.
You mean.
Not
okay. So what about the issue of
jihad? Has to be defined.
Okay. Harris.
Yes. I think the word jihad has to be taken back to its roots of what it means. The greatest form of jihad means a struggle. The greatest form of jihad in our faith is the fact that we struggle with ourselves to become closer to God and closer to fellow human beings. That's how jihad is generally defined in the Quran and in the prophetic traditions. And unfortunately, what has happened with many of the extremists and many of the individuals who are really kind of propagators of hate, people like Osama bin Laden, the Anwar Awlakis of the world, they have really twisted the meaning of jihad to mean a violent struggle. But the highest form of jihad in our faith is the fact that you try to struggle to seek peace within yourself, understand your relations to your fellow human beings, to the Creator. And I think that is a component of jihad, of the struggle that Muslim Americans face on a daily basis, that they're trying to find peace with themselves, with their Creator, with their fellow human beings. They're constantly struggling to become spiritual, to help those around them. And the idea that jihad is this violent struggle is something that's problematic and something that is not really true to our values and to our faith.
Dr. Abdener?
I completely agree. I think this month of Ramadan, where Muslim Americans fast from sunrise to sunset, as you know, that the month of August, the day is longer than the night, and fasting almost 13, 14 hours is the highest form of jihad, which is you are self-purifying, improving yourself, working with your families, trying to feel the hunger that others feel, sharing dinner at night. This is a form of jihad, but it sadly, unfortunately, that it has been an abused word whereby those who oppose Islam use that and say jihad is a violent form of struggle. We have Muslim Americans, 8 million Muslim Americans, who are not involved in violent struggle. They are struggling to be part of the mainstream society, to raise their children, to live with their neighbors in a peaceful way. That is the highest form of jihad that we know. Jihad is personal struggle to be the best that you can be. Whether you're in school, whether you are in profession, that you have to do the best that you can. Jihad with yourself, with your family first. Thank you.
Thanks, Henry, for your call. And we have a lot more calls. We got a lot of emails because people like to call at the last minute. Let's see. Sorry about that. Ed, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, Ann. Calling because I want to kind of refute what Henry said, and that's a last-minute call because of how late he called.
I understand.
Yes. If one were to look at Northern Ireland, would one then say that the Christian faith is a violent faith because they're killing each other in the name of different versions of their religion? Look at what Christianity did to the what we used to call the pagan areas of the world, many times at the point of a gun or at the point of a sword. Just because there are people that are taking a religion and taking many of its tenets to the extreme and ignoring the other precepts of the religion doesn't necessarily mean that the religion itself is not a valid religion as a peaceful religion. But many times we, as Christ said, we talk about the splinter in the neighbor's eye but forget about the log in our own. And that's what a lot of people have forgotten, is that even today, Christianity is still fighting itself and calling certain people real Christians and other people not real Christians. And It may not be as violent as it once was in England and in Germany years ago, but that's why our country was founded, because people were being persecuted over in England for their religious beliefs and came here so that they could be free to follow them, and then persecuted the people that were here.
It's all a cycle, huh, Ed?
It's all a cycle, yes.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Ed. Appreciate it. Dr. Abinder?
Yes, and I just want to reflect on the point that was just made, that when we say the expression, "this is America," we always mean that America is different from other parts of the world in terms of being a person that has rights, responsibilities, the right to speak, the right to assembly, the right to... And when you have these kinds of discussions where you say that Muslims should not have the right to worship in three blocks away from Ground Zero, that takes that, you know, concept that this is America to a different level. That this is America, when children of immigrant parents say to them, "Mom and Dad, this is America, you cannot say that to me, or you cannot do that," which it means that America has a different design whereby people who were persecuted, people who run away from all these conflicts, come to the United States and be part of this melting pot society where everyone's rights and everyone's freedoms are protected. And the Muslims are the last groups that are going through this, but I hope that this is just a discussion and not necessarily something that would have a public policy. Public policy cannot be developed based on people's sensitivities. Muslims understand that there were a lot of sensitivities on the Ground Zero. The families that have lost members have sensitivities. But we do not legislate. We do not make public policy based on people's feelings.
That's all the time we have for this discussion. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all the calls and emails today. We will the next time, I hope. My guest, Harris Taran, he is director of the Muslim Public Affairs Council in Washington, D.C. Thanks for joining us. Also, Dr. Yasser Qadhi, he is a lecturer, and he is one of the voices, one of the faces on Injustice Cannot Defeat Injustice. It's a video on YouTube. You can check it out there. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Qadhi. And also, Dr. Abdinur Mohammed. He's a local educator and activist. Appreciate you being here today.
Thank you, Anne.
Okay, we're running out of time this time for All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.